Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 70 and a half. It is bonus edition content. My name is John Morgan. Cold coffee is sitting here with me. We are at the Hilton Atlanta. It is 5 a.m. in the morning. UFC 201 is in the books. A very exhausted cold coffee is cupping his frosty beverage ever so gently as we look out the window here in downtown Atlanta. The sun will certainly be coming up soon. We were just wrapping up work, and now we get a chance to sit down and talk about what just happened. Tyron Woodley, your new UFC welterweight champion, scoring the devastating striking finish of Robbie Lawler. I'm not going to sit here and say I called it because I went 1-4 on my main card picks tonight. So just because I got the main event right really gives me no bragging rights whatsoever. But I will say Tyron Woodley told us all week long he was the best welterweight in the world. And at least for this week, he is the best welterweight in the world.
That's true. He certainly proved it. And I still like to think that you only picked him because he's very intimidating and he gave you a lot of shit because you didn't pick him before. And maybe if everybody else gave you shit, you would have picked the right ones on those ones. But, yeah, what an impressive fight. And holy cow, it's early, isn't it? In the morning, or is it late in the evening? Whatever.
It's a little bit of both. I'm sure there's people eating breakfast right now.
It is. You're mentioning the outside. I'm just picturing the sun, and I feel like I'm going to melt like a vampire right now. If I see the sun, I'm just going to cringe and curl up in a little ball, and I might cry a little bit.
I'm telling you what, man, these East Coast shows, I feel sorry for anybody that lives on the Eastern time zone. I'm sure there are wonderful cities up and down the Eastern Seaboard, yeah. And you're all very happy living your lives inside these amazing cities, but you guys got to change your time zone, man. We get football on the weekends at 10 a.m. You guys have to wait until 1 p.m. Mm-hmm. Our pay-per-views on UFC fight nights get over at 10 p.m. It was, even though it ended in the first round, it was, you know, still already getting close to 1.
Yeah.
It's rough, and like I said, it's 5 a.m. now.
Yeah, they started playing that. Whatever, they were replaying a fight on the pay-per-view after the fact or whatever, and I was just like, why don't they just turn it off? Let's be done. Let's be done with this thing. But it was good. What a great night, man. There was some really, really good fights. So.
It really was. You know, it was one of those cards that, man, there was just everything that's been going on in July. I don't think anybody was really looking for this card. Let's you know, first talk about the media attendance here. There was not much media. We all kind
really
of
wasn't.
You know, it's the same crew that we see. It's you know, MMA Junkie. Of course we run into the MMA Fighting crew. We run into the Sure Dog crew. You know, we run to the MMA Weekly crew. And we all kind of see each other in every city we go to. But you know, we were all kind of there in the back saying, gosh, you know, there's not a lot of people here, man. There's not much media. And so this card really didn't get much attention. You know, ticket sales were okay. They weren't great, but you know, there's just been a lot of MMA action. But I did think tonight ended up being a lot of fun, even though really I think a lot of people were kind of on the fence as to whether or not they even wanted to buy this pay-per-view, even the hardcores.
Yeah, I was surprised. I mean, Atlanta's a pretty decent sized market when it comes to news and whatnot. And you know, we had some media that came out, I want to say maybe for that first media day, there were some people here, but, you know, maybe after Woodley kind of put him on the spot, you know, with his non-answers, maybe they went, you know, off into a corner and didn't want to come back out or whatever. But to not see any, for the most part, local media with cameras or anything like that, and in the back room, and Esther Lynn, you know, if you check out her Twitter, posted a picture, and at one point it was just four of us sitting in the back room with full of tables and whatnot, and it was just like, but nobody else there, and it was just really just kind of, I was scratching my head like, I don't understand. This is a pay-per-view in a big city. I don't understand why there wasn't the huge media turnout or whatnot. So I don't know. I mean, I was a little bit surprised because, you know, the fights, I mean, they turned out. I mean, it was good. I mean, I don't know if I expected, you know, especially after, I think after 200, you know, it's hard to follow that
right.
Big weekend, and this is one of the
that
first cards everybody's looking at, and they're like, oh, what are they going to have now, you know? And I thought there were really some really, really good fights, you know, kind of top to bottom. I mean, was it the best card? No, but I thought it was pretty exciting. I mean, I was, you know, definitely enjoying watching the fights. But, yeah, I was a little surprised by the lack of media in such a big town that has such a big media presence.
It was. All right, let's talk about Tyron Woodley in the main event. You know, this fight started unfolding, and, you know, we mentioned Tyron being kind of a quick starter. and Robbie Lawler not always being the fastest starter. And that was kind of, you know, I think mainly the basis for the reason I thought Tyron could get this done. You're right, the fact that he basically told me if I didn't pick him and he was one that he would call me out in the press conference probably had something to do with it as well. But Tyron's a good dude. And I said it, man, that interview that I did with him last week, and we played it on the full episode, episode number 70 that we released on Friday, it's just something. It's weird to say this because it's kind of hard to quantify, but like, you see this sometimes with fighters where they've got this confidence, they've got this air about them. Like, you can just tell everything's dialed in and everything's right. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to explain it exactly right, but he gave me that sense. You know, there's other times where guys are – you could tell they're trying to hype themselves up, and Tyron just wasn't, man. It seemed like he was coming in well-prepared. I do wonder, and Brett Okamoto brought it up in the press conference, you know, what these wars that Robbie Lawler's been through, what they've done to his body, what they've done to his mind – a lot of things, but as this fight started out, it was interesting because Tyron Woodley was being very, very patient, studying things, just kind of, you know, biding his time, and I thought, uh-oh, you know, we talked about the quick start, we need to see that quick start, but once he unleashed that right hand, it was lights out.
Yeah. Now, what did you think? When they first started getting together, they kind of got to get against the cage, and it looked like, you know, Woodley was kind of pushing against him, and I thought the separation was really quick.
Very quick.
And I was just like, they didn't even really get a chance, and I thought if anything else, that might have helped both of them kind of settle in, because they were both being very respective. You know, you knew what was coming. You know, Robbie wasn't really pushing in, wasn't trying to go in, didn't want to face some of those quick swings, you know, and you're right, Woodley was very just methodic about it. He was just kind of pacing it a little bit, but I thought maybe he was going to try some bull rush just to kind of get in there and start swinging or whatever, and he didn't. I think he was just really just so confident and knew that if he took his time, that opening would open up, and his striking was sharp, and it was just powerful. And, you know, I mean, but that's what everybody said, you know, that if he got past the first round and started getting later, that Woodley would wear down, but everybody knew he was so dangerous in that first round, and
he proved it.
He proved it.
You're right. You know, you mentioned that quick restart. Dan Mirgliotta was the ref, and I thought it was a little too quick, to be honest with you. I didn't think he gave him enough time to work in that position, but obviously ended up working out good for Tyron. Anyway, it did concern me, you know, in knowing that Tyron was my pick, and oh my God, bro, I was 0-4 at that moment, and facing my first ever night of going 0-for on picks, man. Yeah. I was facing going 0-for-5, and you know, Tyron gets Robbie against the cage and doesn't even come close to a takedown. And I thought
I don't think he even had a chance to try. Yeah. I thought he would, because he looked like he was still sort of leaning against him,
right?
You know, feeling the strength, try to tire him out a little bit. Then I thought maybe he would drop down, but I mean, granted, watching, I mean, it looked like, I don't know, time sort of shrinks a little bit, but it looked like it was like less than 10 seconds. It was just like up against it, started moving, and it looked like it was right about the point where I thought he would try to drop down and do something, and then it was like, boom, separate. I was like, you know, granted, you see two guys that you know are strikers and that, you know, they're so close to it. I thought Mirgliotta would let it go a little bit more just to let it play it out. I mean, you got two guys that are, you know, really strong at that. You know, I wanted to kind of see if the takedown defense was going to be able to stand up to some good, you know, wrestling takedowns and whatnot. And we just never got to see a chance of it. But, you know, I think at that point people wanted to see a knockout, and he kind of separated. But I was just a little surprised. I mean, I don't hate on it because, like you said, it still worked out in Tyron's favor, and he was the one that was actually pressing Robbie against the cage. Yep. So, if anything, it disadvantaged him by separating them, but it actually kind of played into his favor because it
ended up
put
working
back
out.
So.
Devastating right hand put Robbie Lawler down. Tyron wasted, did not waste the opportunity. Jumped on top, got the finish. Obviously, a very just stoppage. Robbie Lawler was, he took some big shots on the ground.
He took some
too.
Shots, and there was that point, especially watch it in slow motion, it was like his head was. He was there, and then it kind of turned into the mat like he was going to go flat. And Dan was right there, and he actually got in there quick to kind of stop it. But, boy, those punches right there were just vicious.
Incredible stuff. Very, very cool scene. I mean, obviously, Tyron's family is known to be very emotional and loud. They were kind of running around everywhere, which was cool to see. He kind of collapsed down. I mean, it was a really cool emotional moment, man, that Tyron was able to kind of deliver on everything that he had promised. It was funny, as he walked by press row, I had my camera ready, my little phone. I decided, let's video the new champ as he's walking by. We're not really allowed to take pictures and video, but once the fights are over, the fights are over. So, just get a little reaction. Tyron saw me, and he saw that I was filming, and he looked right at me and said, "I'm the best welterweight in the world." just keeping with that Marshawn Lynch thing that he had going all week where he was answering everything with that. And I thought that was a cool moment. And the other thing was Duke Rufus, as he was walking by press row as well, I was like, wow, that was an amazing performance. He said, a lot of people don't know. Duke said, a lot of people don't know. I used to train at Miletich years and years ago. He's like, I know Robbie Lawler like the back of my hand. And it kind of made it seem like, hey, we knew exactly how this thing was going to play out. We knew exactly what he was going to do. Now, Tyron ended up saying that, he didn't have any tells. It wasn't necessarily that they knew that he, that right hand was going to be there. But man, he executed on it right. And I'm telling you, when I was talking to him in that interview that I keep going back to, I said, listen, you got to prepare yourself knowing that you're going to be in a war. It's Robbie Lawler. What does that feel like? And he said straight up, all I'm thinking about is I'm going to knock his ass out. And sure enough, man, he went in there and did that. I cannot say enough for how impressive I thought this performance was.
Yeah, it was hands down. It's amazing. And I was wrong. I thought I was going to make it a little bit further, and I thought Robbie would pick it up and take it in the fourth, but didn't come anywhere near there. So, but what a great fight, and Woodley deserved it, man. He looked great. I mean, I think we've seen instances of his greatness, and I think he finally just put it together in a perfect plan and perfect execution. And if anything else, maybe Lawler was the perfect opponent for him that he'd been waiting for, where other guys have been more successful in kind of shutting him down or at least dragging him deeper, So good to him and good to Duke and those guys. I mean, that's good stuff. I mean, I don't know how much I really take when he's like, oh, I know Robbie, blah, blah, blah. That sounds like a lot of posturing and whatever, but I'm not going to doubt Duke because Duke does some great stuff, so I don't know.
He really does. Well, Tyron Woodley ended up getting his own press conference tonight because there was such a small media contingent. The first group of fighters was done rather quickly, and by the time Tyron Woodley made it through, he got a chance to speak all to himself. So figured you would like to hear from the new UFC welterweight champion. I know it's still fresh for you right now, but has it soaked in a little bit? Give us an idea of the emotions that you're going through right now.
No, it hasn't really soaked in yet. I've just been having this surreal training camp where, everything has been stress-free. Duke, Rufus, and Dean Thomas have done a phenomenal job preparing me, giving me the confidence. I've had some amazing training partners, and I was just nervous that I wasn't nervous. And some just told me, you got to enjoy this moment. You've been in this sport for 10 years, and you've never enjoyed the moment. You never received the walkout crowd. And I just felt confident to enjoy this moment. I knew I was going to be the world champion.
You told me that you saw yourself knocking him out. Was there something, was it that right hand that you thought it was going to be? And is there something in his tendencies that you thought that was going to be there?
I saw myself several times knocking him out in several different rounds, and I visualized it over and over again. I do a lot of visualization, but it wasn't something, a chink in his armor that really showed me that. It was just, I knew he would be thinking about my wrestling. I knew he would be thinking about my right hand. So we had several different plays, as we call them, to get to that right hand or get to a powerful punch.
And we didn't get to see the interview, but apparently following social media, you said you like Nick Diaz as the first defensive.
I want to make some money now. I'm going to be honest. The goal one is to be the welterweight champion in the world, but I put in too much time. I'm away from my family way too often. This is a sport where we can make cash now. So instead of just saying this person deserves and he worked his way through the rank, I think Nick Diaz comes off suspension in 2 days. I would love to fight him on 202. I know his brother's fighting. I think he deserves it. He's a guy that's been around the sport. He put a lot of butts in the seat, sold a lot of pay-per-views. So why not put him on a big card with Conor and his brother? I know he's training already, and let him cash out. So I'm willing to give him that opportunity. Or I would like to fight George St. Pierre in New York City.
A lot of people are saying Stephen Thompson should get that first shot. Does that not interest you?
Stephen Thompson said he wanted to fight Robbie Lawler. He said it was a better matchup. The fans would be excited to watch it. He'll get an opportunity to have that fight.
Thanks, Darren.
Just go over here in the front.
Mr. Woodley, being that you're a big port of the Ferguson community, and all that's going on over the past summer, what does this victory mean for your community of Ferguson?
It means a ton. You know, I said this in several interviews. In 1996, Muhammad Ali lit the torch here in Atlanta, Georgia, and I think it's him passing the torch when he passed this year to pass it to us athletes, not just African-American, all athletes, to use our platform to impact, to inspire, to give back to our community. So I'm excited for this because I'm one of the athletes that have taken that charge. I'm okay with going out there and giving back to our community, talking to our youth. And, you know, it means the world to me because I'm a kid that grew up in Ferguson. You know, a lot of people told me I wasn't going to be something or do something, and I've always proved everybody wrong. A lot of people didn't think I deserved this shot. They didn't think I should be fighting for the welterweight title. But I'm sitting here in front of you as a welterweight champion of the world, and it's because I have a great family, a great support system, great trainers, great wife. My mom has, you know, been the backbone of my life. So everybody's given me the tools to be successful, and I think I can push that on to some youth in Ferguson.
Go ahead, Brett.
Hey, Tyron, this question might kind of sound like out of left field, but there have been a lot of UFC champions lose recently. There's just been a lot of turnover at the top. And I just wonder if you were – I know that you're self-motivated, you're completely self-confident, but do you take anything away from – you know, you're booked as a challenger in a title fight, and you see someone that's similar to you, like a Stipe Miocic or an Eddie Alvarez or someone like that, win a title? I mean, does it do anything for your confidence level seeing something like that?
You know, I never really saw those guys as that large of an underdog. You know, Eddie Alvarez is a stud. He's been around the game for a long time. Amanda Nunes, I've been telling people that forever. I said she can compete with a lot of the male bantamweights in the 8th American top team. I just saw her stopping her, and everybody thought I was crazy, but I saw her stopping that fight. And, you know, just some of the other guys, I don't think it's a landslide. We get the entertainment aspect of mixed martial arts in the UFC, but it's also people that are working their butt off and they're trying to be champions. So I don't think it's like the season of the underdog. But once all those guys won, I'm like, man, if I don't win, I'm going to break the streak. So, you know, it wasn't any added pressure. It was actually just something, you know, kind of we laughed about. And the same thing with Fox. You know, I'm one of the analysts on Fox. And all those guys either have had or currently have a belt. And it was my opportunity to go out there. And I didn't want to let everybody down. So I had to make sure I came home with the gold.
And last thing, you know, to follow up on the Nick Diaz comments and the George St. Pierre comments, will you do anything in addition to basically just publicly stating that's who you want next? Like, will you have a conversation?
Those guys
want to
make money. I don't think I'm not a guy that hates athletes. You know, Robbie Lawler is a guy that I admire. I love his comeback story. No other mixed martial artist has had a comeback story like Robbie Lawler. He came back, you know, he had a subpar record in Strikeforce. He had some great moments, some bad moments. He switched weight classes. He came back and he went on a storm. I technically just beat the best welterweight in the world. It wasn't a guy out of his prime. It wasn't a guy that hasn't been on these three wars back to back to back. These guys are legends. You know, Nick Diaz is the top five welterweight of all time in my eyes. George St. Pierre is the number one welterweight in my eyes. If I'm an athlete in this sport, in this division, and I want to say I'm the best in the world, I feel like I should compete against those guys. So I don't feel any obligation to go by the rankings. We all know how those rankings are produced anyway. And I want to go out there and I want to fight the money fights.
All right, thanks.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I'm going to take two more, guys. Got one right here.
You went into the octagon early today. You were talking about visualization. What did you visualize when you were in the octagon before anybody else got into the arena earlier today?
How you know I was here earlier today? Sneak attacking me. I like to go in the octagon to see if it's slippery, number one. Sometimes an adhesive spray is not as sticky as it is in other locations. So I need to know where I can throw kicks from. I need to know if I go for a takedown without a slide, if I'm on top ground and pounding, where my feet come from underneath me. I know it sounds crazy, but it's just something that makes a lot of sense when you're fighting. Also, I just want to feel the moment. You know, I want to walk in there. I want to see the stands empty. And I really, really, as hard as I can, I try to make the octagon and the stands empty when I go out there. So I don't have the pressure, I don't have the fans, I don't hear the screaming. So when I walked out there, I saw a couple of celebrities, I saw a couple of friends, but then I went tunnel vision, I blocked everybody out, and I only heard Duke and Dean Thomas. And also, I want to see the size of the cage. Every cage is not the same size. Some cages like a 29, right? And the one's like a 30.
25 and a 30.
Yeah, so that one was seemed to be a smaller cage. So I know I need to get
it's
in there and get
it. Bigger one.
Is it a bigger one?
Yeah. Well, you made smaller. It small.
Well, good. Well, I like to see that stuff because, you know, your heels hit that fence, and sometimes it's not a good thing against Robbie.
And obviously one of the bigger storylines going into this was the whole American Top Team versus American Top Team. But for you, this has got to be special. You started with them. You've been through the whole thing, and now you've got the championship belt to take home.
Yeah, you know, I think I'm the first product that they've produced from amateur. You know, when I first started with American Top Team, I wasn't even fighting yet. I was a collegiate wrestling coach. I was punching a bag here and there, and a buddy of mine who's actually here, he found Eve Edwards for me, and I started coaching him in wrestling. Then I started doing amateur fights. Then I started training Dean Thomas, Tiago Alves, and all the guys at American Top Team, and I used to get my butt kicked. I was a bag of bones. You know, Tyron come and spar this guy, Tyron come and spar that guy. I used to spar twice a day with the heavy guys in the morning and the light guys in the evening. So with that said, I've earned my key to walk around with the American Top Team flag. You know, I've recruited for the team, and I've set up boots at NCAA wrestling tournaments and try to get people to join the team. You know, I got a lot of pride in American Top Team, and it makes me feel awesome that I can be one of those guys that say, hey, you can join this team. You can be a cardio kickboxing student and decide to want to fight, and you have a chance to be a world champion.
T-Wood, congratulations on the belt and your $50,000 performance of the night bonus. We'll see everyone in Salt Lake City. Thank you.
So Tyron Woodley, the new UFC welterweight champion, certainly enjoying the moment. And Cole Coffey, let's talk about this. The fact that he wants to fight Nick Diaz or George St. Pierre and not Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Now, we'll get to Stephen Wonderboy Thompson in a second, but what do you think about the fact that he's calling out Nick Diaz, who technically has lost three fights in a row? One of them, of course, was overturned. In some ways, I kind of like it. I mean, Tyron's getting in there trying to make a little money for himself, and he was very upfront and open and honest about that. You know, he didn't try to hide it. He's like, I want the money fight. I can't blame him for that. On the other hand, it's like, there's no way and no reason for Nick Diaz to be in a title fight, but I have always said you can literally put Nick Diaz into any fight you want to, and it makes sense. So I'm just going back and forth. I think I like the move on Tyron's part. The fight makes no damn sense whatsoever, but people are going to tune in, right?
Yep, that's exactly it. You're right. It makes no sense except for the fact that I don't know. Both of them, when I think immediately of both of them, I think of two words: ring rust.
Right.
You know, I think if anything, he's picking. He sold it. I like his angle. He's a salesman. I like his angle because he wants and he's right though. I mean, if he had both Diaz brothers on that card, It could be absolutely huge. People are going to tune into it, and I think it would be absolutely incredible. But do I think he's picking them because he thinks that they're going to give him the biggest challenge and they're deserving? No, it's all about a paycheck, and he wants to get an easy paycheck. He even said that – or no, I believe that was a different fighter that was talking about easy paycheck, which was absolutely crazy out of the prelim one. So you got to go and listen to the prelims because I want to say it was Masvidal when he was talking about easy paychecks. But you have
love
to go to, you have to go to the that's what happens when it's late in the evening. It all starting to mush together,
you know?
Or, yeah, whatever this is. But, I think it he probably sees that as an easy paycheck. I think it'd be absolutely incredible fights, but I think he's going for the bigger, badder paycheck because I'm sure now, as the champion, he's got a little more bargaining, you know, power for that. So, but, I'd be absolutely thrilled to watch either one of those fights.
I mean, no way in hell it happens at UFC 202.
No way.
I mean, that's 3 weeks from now.
No way.
Yeah. So, the fact that he's throwing it out there, that's not going to happen.
Stranger things have happened.
Maybe the new owners come in and say, hey, go ahead and make this happen. We need to start making some money back.
Speaking of, did you know, because I had wondered at the weigh-ins, who that sort of casually dressed guy that came up and was standing in Lorenzo's spot.
Yeah, yeah.
He was, in fact, one of the new owners. Like, if you ever go and look at pictures.
I didn't even take a fucking picture of him.
Yeah, if you go and look at, like, pictures, I guess, of Ari Emanuel, or how would you say, Ari, what are the fuck, the dude?
Ari Emanuel?
Ari Emanuel, yeah. Whatever. that's like that dude's in all the pictures with this guy or something like that.
Really?
So this is from my source, Ariel Helwani, who was back in the back with us. He was talking about it. And but yeah, it was
I didn't realize.
Like, yeah, so dude was big baller. I thought he was like a VIP winner.
I did too.
Or something.
Like sometimes people like when they pay for, you know, they donate money or they do, you know what I mean? They allow
they
people to
there.
Be on stage.
But I thought it was kind of just surreal when you think about it. He was standing in Lorenzo's spot as well up there on the stage. So, but yeah, so if you go back and look at the footage of the Wayne stuff, that's who that guy was. But yeah, I don't know. I forget what I was talking about.
I love it, dude. You're just so out of it.
I am so out of it right now. Shit is real right now.
All right.
Not even drunk. I'm just literally tired as hell.
That's so funny. That's what happens when it's 5 o'clock in the morning. I did love Tyron's quote. So I don't think that fight's going to happen at 202. As you said, crazy things have happened. For it to be Woodley and Nick Diaz at some point would not necessarily shock me. But I do think that Stephen Wonderboy Thompson has really earned his spot and should be the rightful number one contender. But I loved Tyron's response in the press conference tonight where he said, you know, Wonderboy already said he wanted to face Robbie Lawler. He's like, now he can't. You know, and I was like,
that's
wow.
Awesome. Yeah, if we were in a movie or whatever, there would have been sound like wah, wah, or something, you know, like, yeah, that was impressive. So good for him. I think you could definitely tell he had been practicing that one or been thinking about that question, you know, so good on him. You know, he's in the driver's seat now. So, yeah, call your shot, man. Make that money.
Robbie Lawler, for his part, classy in defeat. You'd expect nothing less out of Robbie Lawler, the consummate professional, especially in his new run in the UFC, not falling asleep at press conferences like he did at Strikeforce, but basically just made no excuses, said he felt great, and just said that Tyron was the better man. So, a new UFC welterweight champion really is crazy times how many champions have lost their belts already this year. Now, the co-main event, Carolina Kovalevich picked up a decision win over Rose Namajunas. I got to say, I thought Rose Namajunas in that first round looked stellar. I mean, just looked so incredible. The confidence was there. Her footwork was amazing. The way she was just slipping and striking and countering, she looked absolutely amazing, and I thought this girl is about to cruise to a victory. She is piecing up Carolina Kovalevich. Oh, God, I'm tired, too. And I thought she was just going to cruise to a victory, to be honest with you. And then Kovalevich made the adjustments, really started battering her in the clinch. I mean, every time they would get close, even for a second, you know, she would land a couple of knees inside, land a couple of punches. Rose would counter, but Carolina showed her toughness, showed her durability, and really was impressive tonight.
Yeah, I agree, and it's impressive at such a early hour in the morning. You say her last name so very well. I commend you. You do a very good job. I'm not even going to attempt it. But you're right. I think Rose was winning the first round, and then Carolina just did a great job those second two rounds of sort of weathering the storm. I mean, if you see her in the post presser, she took some knocks. I mean, she's wearing sunglasses.
She's wearing sunglasses for a reason.
Yeah, she took some shots and stuff, and good on Rose. And I loved it. There was definitely that mutual respect at the end of them. But they were kind of good to each other the whole time. And I love seeing Rose during the week when she gets the face-offs and all that stuff. She just kind of gets that dead stare, like she's just all business. And, you know, in that first round looked like she was taking care of business. And then it just kind of, I don't want to say it slipped away from her. I think if anything else, Carolina just did a better job of negating what was going on and kind of imposing her will. Her striking looked incredible, you know. And now I guess we get that, see that shot with the Polish against Polish, possibly. You know, Dave was kind of, you know, really sort of non-committal. But even though they kind of said it in the ring, it was like, okay, well, I'm sure somebody's feeding that shit to Joe's ear, you know. So, but I think that's going to be a great fight. I mean, do I think she has what it is to beat Joanna at this point? I think she can give her a good run for her money. But I think Joanna, I mean, she just looks so unstoppable right now. But I do appreciate what those two Polish, I mean, like, where are these Polish fighters
crazy
coming out of? I mean, like, this is just nuts. I mean, is there another one? Is there another couple ones we're going to see some Polish dudes coming out and doing this? Because right now the Polish women are just looking so incredible.
Right, it really is. To think that the champion and the number one contender right now are certainly, you know, from the same country. As you said, Joe Rogan gets in there after the fight and says, hey, congratulations, Carolina. We've cleared it for an all-Poland title fight. Now, the first thing I did was text Dana White because I thought, they're essentially making an announcement right now. And as you said, I mean, Joe's not going to go in there in the cage and just say something random. I mean, he had to have heard something. And the first thing Dana texts me back is like, listen, no, it's definitely not done yet. You know, we got to get back and figure things out. You know, there's been so much happening. It's been so busy. We'll figure things out. Now, he did say, you know, maybe it does seem to make sense, but it's not done yet. So I guess it's not official yet. And then, of course, I tried to follow up with Dave Schaller in the press conference as well. And, you know, he said it's not done yet, but it does sound like a very, very good idea. And it does sound like a great idea. I love the idea of doing it in Poland. You know, the first Poland show, you know, the crowd didn't end up being there. And if you'll remember in our time there, I mean, we were basically told that UFC's not the dominating brand there. It's KSW. That's the dominating brand there. But I think this would be the moment that the UFC could come in and make a huge impact in Poland and maybe swing the pendulum back in their direction, because you're coming in there with two Polish fighters. It just seems like it's they, you know, both of those ladies said they'd like to do it in New York, but damn it, everybody wants to fight in New York. I mean, literally everybody is saying they want to fight at Madison Square Garden. I think doing this in Poland, I mean, you got to do it, right?
Makes a lot of sense. It really, really does. I bet, you know, it's funny when I was thinking about what, you know, we were talking about how somebody was probably talking in Joe's ear. I bet it was the same dude, and I don't want to name his name, that stepped out there and said that shit like, go ask Rhonda, is she willing to take a fight, blah, blah, blah. I guarantee it was the same motherfucker that did that one that probably did it. But I won't name his name, but...
Guy in the truck?
Guy in the truck that's, you know, I don't know. I don't want to name his name, but I guarantee it was him saying some shit, which I'm guarantee he's probably heard some things and probably thought, oh, yeah, this is good, and I can say this because I'm sure he's heard it from Dana and those guys, but... You know, of course, you can never take that sort of thing. You don't want to go out there because, like they said, they don't like to match make on fight night, you know, and here's this dude doing whatever. So I'm sure if that is the case as for what happened, I'm sure he heard a few things, but I don't know. I don't know. I don't wanna, I don't know if their name's out there, but I know it was you, motherfucker. I know it was you.
I just threw you randomly under the bus.
Randomly under the bus.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right. Well, Kovalkiewicz, I did like that she has a little swagger. Now, here's the thing. Joanna right now, to me, I mean, the argument is either right now it's her or Cyborg are the best pound-for-pound females on the planet. And Cyborg is obviously just a monster and so fun to watch. But Joanna just looks amazing. The pace, and I thought Rose's speed and her pace was going to be a problem tonight. Carolina found a way to kind of nullify that with her clinch game and you know, just being durable. I mean, she took some big shots and never staggered. I mean, just walked right through them. I don't know if Carolina is going to be able to challenge Joanna, but I don't mean that as an insult to her because I don't know that I pick anybody against Joanna right now.
I agree. And if, you know, if it does actually happen, if anything else, I'm definitely going to lean towards Joanna, but I think that's the kind of thing that it's going to be a fight that we're going to see happen again. I mean, because these definitely are two that I think are destined to maybe keep meeting, and maybe if anything else, if it does happen in Poland, then they have this extra support and extra beef also to see who wants to be the queen of the Polish MMA scene or whatever. And maybe if Carolina does fight her and does lose, I definitely see her, you know, if Joanna can hold on the belt, which I don't see her losing it anytime soon. Maybe it's the kind of thing that they have a rematch and meet back up, and maybe she learns something and maybe eventually gets that final piece that somehow beats Joanna. Because you're right. Right now, in my opinion, Joanna's unbeatable. I mean, I just think she is she's too much right now. I think her hands – she really was, I think, so test that last one. I mean, she showed me so much in that last fight where finally Seymour was like, okay – you know, somebody's going to give her a run for the money, and she did for a while, but by the end, it was just like, this is amazing. The deeper in the rounds it got, somehow she got better and looked even fresher than it started, and it was just like, how is this even possible? So at this point, I don't doubt Joanna. I'm not, if I was a betting person, which I am at times, I will not bet against Joanna, at least not right now. I mean, I haven't seen anybody that's gonna take it from her. I guarantee she's gonna defend that belt for at least a few more times before people start picking up on maybe what to do to be the answer to the Joanna right now.
You're only a betting person when you're not chasing Pokemon Go characters.
I was just trying to do it a second ago.
Oh my gosh, pathetic. pathetic.
All right. What else do you do at whatever time in the morning it is?
Closing in on 6 a.m. Amazing. all right, well, listen, I did like the little attitude that Carolina showed. She took a second to trash talk the champ a little bit, which, hey, show a little person up. Is that your Pokemon Go?
No, it's your video. It finally got to play it. It wasn't working for me earlier, but whatever. It finally decided to play when I touched my phone.
All right, well, while Kenny over here plays – God, who's Kenny? While Cole – that's how tired we are. It's been a long night. Well, he does that. Listen to Carolina Kovacevic from the press conference. I like the fact that she's got a little swagger with her, man. She's got a little attitude, and I dig that. And I think you need that if you're going to go into a fight with Joanna and Jacek. So check that out. I'm going to refill some frosty beverages here.
You know, in the cage, Joe Rogan kind of made it sound like Carolina is definitely next for Joanna. It seemed like we had talked about that as a possibility, but can you tell us behind the scenes, is that official? Is that done? Is it clear? What can you share with us?
So it's a very, very strong possibility. We'll get back together on Tuesday like we do after every big fight, but it makes a lot of sense. And Dana just did an interview on Fox with Megan O'Leary and said that's the type of fight you'd want to do in somewhere like Poland. So our options are pretty wide open right now, but that's the fight to make. That looking on social media, a lot of fans excited about that. Looks like Carolina wants to say something too.
I won't fight with Joanna. I am ready for her. She said that I'm not on her level. I think I am good enough to fight with her. I won't fight with her. Let's do this. Polish power versus Polish power.
How's that for seizing the moment?
Hey, Carolina, I did want to kind of follow up with you. You know, you said that you're worth it.
Please, slowly. My English is not perfect.
No worries. I did want to ask you, if that is the fight that's made, what do you think it is that you have that you can beat Joanna that she hasn't seen yet?
Joanna is very good fighter. I respect her very much. She is the best on the world. Maybe I'm not the best, but I can beat the best.
Congratulations. In the first round, you weren't very active. It seemed like you were trying to sort of figure her out and see how the fight was going to go. Can you speak on that? Is that what was happening? I mean, I think most people had her winning the first and you clearly winning the second and third, but what were you seeing in the first round that led to you doing so well in the second and third?
Start fighting. I need time to, I don't know how to say. Sometimes I need a little bit time to fight.
Okay.
Right now you're 10-0. You're undefeated. Why would Joanna say that you're not on her level when you're undefeated? You've beaten everybody. Is that she has some kind of problem with you?
I don't know why. I think she's scared, just like that, yeah.
So Kovacevic says that maybe Joanna's a little bit scared to fight her. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's not the case. I don't think Joanna is afraid. I think Joanna would be okay with fighting Brock Lesnar, to be honest with you. But I love the swagger anyway. You got to have a little trash talk in there. I think that makes it more fun. Now, you remember back in Chicago, Joanna was a guest fighter there, and she said that she's actually looking to the fight between Jessica Andrade and Joanne Calderwood as another fight that could be a potential number one contender fight. But I'm not saying I'm opposed to that, like maybe sitting back and waiting, but that's taking place in Cleveland. I mean, that's still more than a month away. And I think right now you've got the undefeated Carolina in there. I think she should be the number one contender. And I think the chance, again, to do something in Poland and to really maybe kind of swing the momentum of the UFC in Poland is too much to pass up. I think you got to do it.
I agree. It'd be wonderful. And what better than to have two of your best?
I agree.
Let's do it.
Speaking of wonderful or not wonderful, if you happen to be from the Buckeye State, your boy, Xenia Ohio's own Matt Brown, he ran into a juggernaut, Jake Ellenberger. the guy that we have been waiting to see forever, the guy that was a top welterweight contender that somehow seemed to have disappeared off the face of the earth, he came back tonight and did it in emphatic fashion. Cole Coffey, I know you always stand by your fellow Ohioans.
I'm a little biased.
Incredibly biased when it comes to anybody from Ohio, but not afraid to admit it. What did you think as you were watching this fight play out? Because this was a rough one for Matt Brown.
It was rough right from the get-go. I don't think I had a moment where I was like, all right, let's do this. Let's do this. Because, what was it, 10 seconds in, he already dropped Matt down to the ground. And, boy, I mean, kudos to Jake. He did exactly like what he said. He said, I'm going to stop thinking about it. I'm just going to get in there. I'm going to do my thing. I'm going to just make it exciting, do whatever. And, boy, I mean, you're right. I'm very, very biased. And Matt Brown is probably one of my favorite fighters. I love his fighting style. And, you know, even when he took that shot that knocked him down on that first one, he weathered it. You know, he got his wits about him and, you know, was hanging in there. But then Jake just was, like you said, the juggernaut and just was just relentless. I thought his striking looked absolutely incredible. It was, you know, I hated to see what he was doing, but he was doing incredible work out there. So good job for him. I mean, whatever mental thing that he had to clear out of his head and, you know, whatever work he's been doing, his coach has just had him looking sharp. And as much as it pained me to see an Ohioan lose, I got to give Jake props because, I mean, you know, I think he returned to a form that I think when I first came and really started watching him perform in the UFC, I thought he was I thought he was a guy that I thought at one day could be a champion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then he just kind of, you know, I don't know, just kind of fell off the radar, you know, with some losses and stuff. And I know that Dana and those guys have always been very high on him, even when he came back and signed on his contract, signed on for a decent amount of fights. I think they knew that there was something there, and I think we all knew something was there. I think he just had to tap back into it and figure out whatever it was that was missing. And tonight, it showed that he figured something out. He figured that out, and if he keeps coming like that, I mean, that is an impressive display, and he's going to – I think the rest of the division should take notice, because if he can keep coming like that, he's going to run through some dudes.
Jake Ellenberger, man, you know, you go back to kind of the vintage era. You know, he had that 53-second knockout of Jake Shields, that incredible war that he had with Diego Sanchez in Omaha. That was such a fun night. That was I remember clearly because that was the last three-round main event in UFC history. It was an incredible fight back and forth, and it should have gone two more rounds. It would have been amazing to go two more rounds, and it didn't. And that was the night I remember Dana was like, we're fixing it. We're never going to do this again. Like, when we have main events, we're going to go two more rounds. And it was because Ellenberger and Diego Sanchez had such a great fight. Of course, you remember he lost to Martin Kamen, but he was winning that fight before that. I mean, just so many great fights in a row. And then you look back, and he's 2-5 in his last seven fights now, even with the win. But some of the names he lost to, Robbie Lawler, Rory McDonald, Stephen Thompson, you know, still the very top of the division. But as you said, you know, we could see it during those changes. You could see, like, him just really literally thinking about everything. I mean, it was so weird. You could see him in his head just hesitating. And to see him get over that was really impressive. You know, when he lands that big right hand, you're going down no matter who you are.
Holy cow.
And credit to Matt Brown, because I'll say this. I thought Matt Brown was done with that first right hand. He gets back up, and for a minute it looked like the momentum was switching completely into his direction. It looked like, oh, my God, here is the immortal, the guy that just can't be knocked out. It looked like things were swinging his direction, and then that just nasty liver kick put Matt Brown down. Now it's Matt Brown that you're wondering, you know, still only losing to elite competition, but man, he's in need of a victory at this point.
Yeah, it's tough, and I hate to think about it, but because what is that? That's not three, is it?
He goes to 1-4 in his last five.
It's that sucks, because I hate to think. I would like to think that because of his style and how he goes out there that kind of gives him a pass. I like to think that Dana and a lot of those guys, you know, they like to keep exciting fighters. They like to keep guys that go out there and throw. But, you know, as we know that, you know, you can't keep guys on there that don't win, unfortunately. At least that's been their mentality. I hate it that it's like that, but, you know, it is a business, and I understand when they make those decisions. Hopefully that I would think that he's exempt because
I think he's safe.
You know, nobody looks at Matt Brown and says, oh, man, that guy, he's just a grinder. He just kind of lays and kind of humps his opponent. You know, that's right. Never going to be said about him. And I would like to think that he doesn't have anything to worry about. But you never know. I mean, there's been people released that I think I've been surprised and they've released. I don't think they'll do that because I know if they did, somebody would be very, very smart and
in a heartbeat.
You know, so.
Yeah, I think he's definitely safe. But, you know, if he wants to be relevant in the division, if he wants to keep getting these big name fights and big money fights, you know, he told us earlier this week he just signed a new 8-fight deal. You know, normally when you sign new deals, that includes a little bit of a raise in there as well. Yeah. So, you know, we'll see when the pay reports come out what kind of money he's making. But, you know, you're right. His style, Matt Brown, is a lot of fun to watch. He's always going to be in battles. And I think he's safe, but I mean, you can't lose forever and stick around.
Well, imagine that. I mean, if he's saying he just signed an 8-fight deal and that's after losing some fights, you know, that's how much I think they respect him. So I would say that's a pretty good sign, you know, if they're giving something like that. And who knows? Man, they keep throwing out that 8-fight deal. Remember Silva signed for 8 fights and, you know, Brown signed for 8. I mean, they're locking these guys down. I mean, granted, you know, I think now that some other organizations are out there starting to throw some money around, I think they're trying to do a good job of keeping around. But I think most fighters, like you've said before, you know, realize that the UFC is the top of the heap. You know, they want to be a fighter in the UFC, fighting the best guys. So I think a lot of these guys are probably more than happy to sign. But, man, that is just that's a long time.
It's a long time.
It's a long time when you think about it. But I guess not if you're fighting 3 or 4 times a year, but – you know, a lot of these cats aren't fighting 3 or 4 times a year. So I don't think we're ever going to see Silva get through those 8 fights.
He might not. It's crazy. Yeah, Matt Brown, he stays busy. There's no doubt about it. And that was his 22nd UFC fight. So
that's crazy.
It's nuts. The main card opened up with a couple of decisions. Eric Perez picked up a unanimous decision over Francisco Rivera. I had picked Cisco going into that. I thought Cisco was going to be able to tag him, and he did early on. You know, he's having some success, but Eric Perez really settled down, and I thought fought a smart fight. They got a lot of boos, and you know, they started out round 3 with just that was
awesome.
It was incredible. I mean, that was one of the nuttiest flurries.
That made the fight for me. I mean, even Agent X back home watching, and she's like, "Oh, this fight sucks," and I was just like, give it a second, because, you know, there was a little timing between the fight pass or whatever. Yeah, the first 2 rounds, you know, could just take them away, throw them away. Because once that 3rd round started and they were just able to go, and it's funny because Eric sort of says, you know, his coaches and everybody just like, what are you doing? You know, like, why are you letting them bait you into it? You know, and he just kind of had a moment in his head where he just wanted to be a little bit crazy. And I think he has that possibility in his style to really be exciting, just kind of go. And oh my lord, it was so exciting. I think anytime 2 guys are ready to just go out there and stand and just throw down and see whose chin's better, who's going to be able to keep hitting, it's just amazing. I mean, and it's funny because at the end of it, you know, you see Francisco throw a punch and he misses and he dropped himself. You know, it was just like, oh, but I loved it. It was amazing. Then once, you know, Eric kind of got on top, it was just like, oh, I was like, I wanted more of that.
I know. You know, it's funny because the crowd was booing it. They wanted to stand up. But Eric Perez was staying busy. I mean, he was, and to be honest, that was the intelligent thing to do. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yes, that was a lot of fun to start the 3rd round, and thank you for doing that, because that is something that you will probably be seeing on UFC highlight reels forever.
Oh,
that will definitely be in some sizzle reels. But once he got the fight to the floor, you know, just staying on top, controlling. Cisco was obviously tired, but, you know, just staying there and using the dominating position to win the fight, I think that was smart. I know it wasn't as fun, but Eric Perez, I think Goyito did the right thing there. You have to be mature about it, and you have to realize you need to win. And I think that was smart on his part.
I do, too. I think, you know, cooler heads prevail, because I think he's a young guy. He wants to go out there. He wants to prove himself. He wants to throw down. And he's got a chin. I mean, like, he took some shots, but he was given some shots. And I think, You're right. I mean, I think he finally got his wits about him, or maybe he finally heard his coaches saying, like, what the hell are you doing, you know? Because we kind of asked him in the back, like, what did your coaches say after that, you know? And he was like, yeah, they told me I was crazy, you know, and, you know, whatever. But, you know, good on him for finally, you know, kind of calming down. But thank you for, you know, like, just the fact that I loved it. They were thrown, and then Francisco's kind of urging, like, come on, let's do it, you know? Just like, this is amazing. I mean, that's one of the things that stands out for me as for, like, probably the funnest moments. And it wasn't the best fight up to that point, but that kind of really, after that, ranked that in my book for tonight as one of my favorite fights
Hell yeah.
of the night.
So, hell yeah. That was amazing. Even just that little series, you know.
It was incredible.
And then the opening fight there, Ryan Benoit did pick up a decision win over Freddie Serrano. Freddie Serrano is an interesting cat. I mean, this is a former, you know, Olympic level wrestler. You know, he's picked up medals on the international stage. He's 36 years old, so he's not a young guy. But I mean, he shows like a lot of talent, a lot of skills. But he also does some dumb stuff, man. Like I hate to question a guy's fight IQ and decision making, and I don't want to take away from Ryan Benoit, who came in on short notice and had all the praise in the world for our good friend Ricky Lundell, but I felt like this fight was there for Serrano to take, and for some reason he just kind of like shut down in the third round. I think Benoit was exhausted. I think it looked like something was wrong with his arm. There was a lot going on. I think they ended up saying maybe he dislocated his shoulder or something.
Yeah, he came into the back room and his arm was wrapped up, and I can't remember I think he said he thought it was more like his shoulder, but I'm sure they're going to do more testings, and we'll find out some more later on.
I mean that was a gutsy performance from Benoit, and so I don't want to take away, but anytime I see a guy that I feel like the fight is there for the taking and they let off the gas, it kills me, you know, it kills me. And, and I feel like Serrano, you know, he has great wrestling. He's incredibly creative with his striking, even though that's not really his strong suit. I mean, he does some nutty stuff. It makes it fun to watch, you know, kind of a, you know, like a Maximo Blanco type guy that just does weird stuff. But I don't know, man. I just feel like he let out the gas, and I feel like he kind of let this fight get away. And I thought that was a little disappointing.
Yeah, and this is another one where, you know, so I'm not going to try to weigh in too much because this is one of the fights that I didn't really get a chance to watch too much of because once we started doing some interviews. But one of the things I did take away of, and I don't know if you were going to bring it up or not, was the whole after the round stopped and he went in there and he had the strike. And he explained in the back, and you can, if you guys go and watch the interviews, you'll hear it some more if you watch the post-fight interview. I guess he suffered some ear damage as a kid.
This is interesting. I hadn't had a chance to see this yet.
Yeah,
really,
I can't remember if it was like a Q-tip or something, but he suffered some, so he doesn't hear well out of his right ear.
Because this has happened before with him,
and that's why. I mean, I don't know if it's I don't know if it's an issue, but he hasn't. I don't know why he wouldn't say this the first time, but he said he suffered some ear damage, so he doesn't hear well out of his right ear.
Huh?
He didn't say like, "Hey, I'm deaf" or whatever. He just says, "I'm hard of hearing out of my right ear," so a lot of times he doesn't hear anything. But and he tried to say that he didn't really see Herb and Herb Dean, I believe it was Herb.
Herb wasn't there tonight. You are tired.
No, but I'm trying to think who it was that repped his match, but whatever. All right. It was another guy that looked exactly like Herb Dean in my tired eyes. But no, whatever it was, but he said that he didn't see the ref, but I'm thinking when
it
I'm
was
going
Blake,
back.
It was Blake Grice, who was a white dude.
It totally looks like Herb Dean. As I said, I didn't watch much of the fight, but when I did see that little part there.
With short hair.
I sure didn't have dreadlocks.
I'm pretty sure.
But he said that he didn't see the ref step in between him, even though I thought the ref was already right there pulling him apart when he took the swing.
I'd have to go back and watch it again, too, but I thought he was right there on top of it.
I thought Herb Dean was there. So that was his story, was that he suffered ear damage, so he doesn't hear well out of his right ear. So who knows? I mean, there could be some truth to that or whatever, but I don't know. I think a lot of people aren't buying it. The people that have sort of watched it and saying that, you know, that's not – that maybe he's got more aggression issues or something.
Right.
And maybe whatever. But who knows? I think if anything else, I'd have to go back and watch to see, one, who the ref was, and two, to see – if in fact the ref was not in between, because usually the refs are pretty good about getting right in there for the close of the round. But yeah, he says he didn't hear the bell ring, and that's why he was still continuing, because he thought that he had him on the run, and so he was going after to try to finish it a little bit and try to hit. So that's what that was all about. He said he didn't even realize that he got pushed. He's like, I think he maybe hit me after it or whatever. He's like, I thought maybe.
Like, yeah, he shoved you, bro.
Well, he thought it was actually at first, he thought the ref was grabbing on his back or right. whatever.
Interesting.
So
I have to watch that. I didn't get a chance to see that yet, so that's good to know.
Yeah.
The prelims finished up with Nikita Krylov scoring a devastating knockout of Ed Herman. Man, Ed Herman, a true veteran of the sport, has been around for a long time, a true character of the sport, you know, 35 years old. Man, he'd never even looked competitive in this fight. I hate to say that, man, but it makes you wonder if, you never want to be that guy to say it's time to hang it up. And Ed Herman has paid his dues in the sport. And, Krylov, at just 24 years old, I mean, this is a guy well younger, but Herman just never looked competitive at all in this fight, and that finish was just brutal.
Yeah, it was. It's funny because at that time we had just got done doing guest fighter interviews with Juliana Pena back there. She's a huge Ed Herman fan, so the whole time she was trying to root for Ed.
Oh, wow.
Then as Ed's going down, she's like, no. So I was kind of caught up more and listening to this whole thing going on, and there's other little stories that eventually will come out that we were finding out about that were absolutely incredible, that you'll hopefully see, speaking of, like, when we found out that Juliana and Amanda Nunes were in the same car that came over to do the guest fighter stuff.
That's so ridiculous.
Which was so ridiculous and bizarre. So we're all talking about that at the same time as the fight was happening. And I remember just sort of soaking it in because Julian was like, no, Ed. And it was just kind of vicious. But you're right. He didn't seem into it. And I've always liked Ed. I've always loved his toughness.
Mm-hmm.
But again, yeah, nobody wants to be the one. I don't want to see it end, but, seems to be one of those guys that's just falling a little bit further and further as the division kind of keeps moving up. He kind of seems to be falling further and further back, but he's a tough dude, man. I still think he's got fight in him. He just, didn't seem really that into it tonight.
Not at all. Krylov, meanwhile, has 5 wins in a row now
he's
at light heavyweight.
A tough dude.
It's funny because when he came to the UFC, he had that nickname, The Al Capone. Not just Al Capone, The Al Capone. He
like
had
the
that
cold coffee.
Just like
I
the
totally
cold coffee.
I totally get it.
The Ohio State University. He had that picture on SureDog for his Fight Finder page. It was just ridiculous of him with UFC gloves and, the Al Capone getup. And it just seemed like, I don't want to say a joke, but, it just didn't seem like he was the real deal. And now, all of a sudden, he's looking like a legitimate contender at light heavyweight. And, man, the guy's fun to watch. And that finish tonight was, absolutely devastating. So that was a great way to finish out the prelims. Just before that, Jorge Masvidal picked up a decision over Ross Pearson. Ross, man, I had this weird feeling about this fight in that, like, it's obvious that Ross took it because he was frustrated and disappointed. And, it doesn't hurt to pick up an extra paycheck. And you just had a new kid and all that. But, man, moving up to 170 pounds when you to face a guy like Masvidal, it just seemed like a tall order. And I worried going into this fight that Ross had made a decision out of frustration without really thinking it through. Masvidal looked fantastic tonight. The counter striking was incredible. And, a little bit scary. Ross Pearson showed his toughness as well, almost getting finished. But, man, it was wild to see at the end of the second round, Ross Pearson thought the fight was over and there was still another round to go. And, that kind of scares you a little bit. I mean, anybody can lose track of the rounds, I guess. But it kind of makes you wonder if he was concussed.
When
he was
nearly finished.
I
didn't see that.
Yeah,
I didn't see that part.
It didn't. I don't think they showed it necessarily on the broadcast. Maybe they did. But he raised his arms, and I think he was trying to give Masvidal a hug, and the typical post fight celebration type stuff. Yeah, and it was only the end of round two. So, Ross Pearson, a guy that's in need of a win, and you know, hopefully you take a little time and not try to rush back in there again, because this was a tough fight. But Masvidal was on point, man. Just his striking was incredible. The box, when that guy is working, man, his jab, his counter hooks, they're just a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, yeah, impressive. Man, that's crazy. I didn't hear about that in between. I mean, I probably would have given a little more context to how much damage he had actually taken at that point. But yeah, oof, that was a good one. What I got to see, it was very, very impressive.
Masvidal was kind of playing around with us all week. He seemed to be very relaxed. Yeah. You know, every time he got a chance, he was striking that, you know, little modeling pose or whatever. Yeah. What did he have to say in the back?
He's the one I was trying to think earlier that was calling out for the easy paycheck. And who the fuck did he ask for? It was maybe not Khabib and something. We'll have to go back and look at it. Again, the night's blurring and it's becoming very, very early. But if you watch back in the post-fight of the prelim stuff, he actually calls out and he was talking about some of the main competitors. And he was like, yeah, I'll take that because I want an easy paycheck or something. I was just like, dude's got some balls, man. He was on fire. But, yeah, he gave a nice little pose at the end. But, yeah, he was fun to be around this week. He looked on point and it's tough because, you know, Ross is a big favorite of mine. I mean, I think just from when I first started the UFC, it was from some of my trips overseas. And I always just thought I loved his heart. I loved his character. And now that, you know, we've been around him so much, he's much easier to understand. I feel like I'm thinking like, maybe 100%. I just know him better now. You know, that I just understand him easier.
When he first came to the UFC, I couldn't understand a word he said.
Yeah.
I had to record his interviews and then just listen to him back. Like, literally, as we were standing face to face, I wouldn't understand anything he said because I couldn't do any follow up questions because I had no idea what he was saying.
Yeah. No, it's great. And we had a great time with him earlier this week when we did our interviews. And it's tough. That's what one of the toughest things I think about this job is that, you know, as media, you're supposed to be unbiased and you're just on the fence, and both guys were incredible guys to deal with this week, and it's tough. You don't like to see either one of them lose, but you know there's always got to be a loser. But you know, I know Ross is a tough dude. He'll rebound back from it. You know, I think you're right. He made a big jump. It was a big step up. You know, just taking a fight last minute, let alone it was supposed to be a vacation, supposed to do whatever, and then he jumps into a fight with, you know, in a different weight class than he normally does. That's a tall order. So hopefully he comes back from it strong and maybe realizes that that's not the best thing to do.
Yeah, because it seemed like, you know, when we talked to him earlier this week, it seemed like Ross was kind of thinking, you know, this is not cutting weight. It's pretty awesome. Maybe 170 is the place for me. And
Where else did that happen? When somebody was like, I can eat steaks for breakfast, and I'm just going to hop up and jump and take this. It feels like it's happened somewhere else.
There was a certain recently. Irishman that...
I feel...
Conrad McGillicuddy or Conor McGoover or whatever. One of those guys.
But, yeah, so there's a lesson to be learned there about just jumping outside and thinking you can do it successfully.
Well, another brutal knockout was Anthony Hamilton needing just 14 seconds to knock out Damian Grabowski. I kind of thought this was going to be a fun fight just based on the weigh-ins on Friday. You know, they kind of had a little, you know, Anthony got up in his face, and Damian wasn't really appreciating that at all. And, you know, sometimes these heavyweight fights between these, you know, mid-tier type heavyweights, you're not really sure how it's going to turn out. But I kind of had a feeling this might be fun. And sure enough, man, Anthony Hamilton just started swinging bombs.
Beast.
And connected. Those uppercuts were the ones that really did the business. And Grabowski was, man, he was out cold for a while. That was a devastating finish.
Yeah, you were saying how he was still, I mean, because they obviously didn't show up, but you were saying that he was still on the ground, on the mat for quite a while.
Yeah, and a couple of minutes.
Yeah, that's one of the times it just drives me crazy when you're stuck in the back because we're at the mercy of what they show us on the screen. And I can only imagine because, I mean, that was vicious. That was devastating. And he came back in the back, and he was as pleasant as can be. And it's like you just destroyed a man out there, and you are like the nicest, most pleasant person right now. You know, that's one of the amazing things I think about these fighters is that, you know, when they get in there, they're all business. They flip that switch, and then you see him after, and you're like, no, you didn't just fight. You didn't just do that. And Yeah, unreal. But man, with a performance like that, you got to think, just like the same thing with like Derek. When Derek, the Black Bees, one of our favorites, who we actually got to do some interviews in the back room today, you know, he did that as well. Just came on the scene after that, you know, first initial loss or whatever, came and just is just destroying guys, and he's quickly jumping up the rankings. If Hamilton keeps doing that, he's going to quickly do it up, especially with that size that he has. He's such an impressive physical body that when he makes contact, and I mean, it's just devastating. I mean, but I guess that's what they always say about the heavyweights. There's always that possibility of you make contact, it's a one punch, you're done. And we literally saw that tonight. And just a stark reminder in what the heavyweight power is out there. And I loved it, you know. I mean, like, yes, it's a 14 whatever second or whatever you said, but that's the one amazing things I think it is about the heavyweights, and when they have that power that, yeah, you might think it might be this, because we see so many of those ones that we're like, oh, this is going to be over quick, and they just grind out and grind out, and it's three rounds of what the fuck have we been watching? But this one was completely the opposite in everything that you had thought it would be, you know, even though you didn't maybe have the biggest household names, he still had a big reminder that, hey, this is what heavyweights can do and why they're so exciting and why we always want, usually, a heavyweight fight to be somewhere on the card. You know, I think when we get to those cards where you don't have a heavyweight, I think a lot of people are like, oh, what's going to be or whatever, you know. But this was another reminder as to why heavyweight division is so exciting to watch.
The opposite end of the spectrum was Wilson Hayes at flyweight picking up a quick submission win over Hector Sandoval. I mean, listen, Wilson Hayes, first of all, was extremely happy when he talked to you guys. I haven't seen the interview yet, but based on the screenshot you sent,
the best, happiest moment for that screenshot.
Literally the best screenshot is hilarious. But I just want to say this. I mean, Hector Sandoval, it took a tall order, man. Just to make your UFC debut on short notice against a legit top-ranked fighter in any division is tough to do, but Hector Sandoval looks like somebody that will put on some fun fights in the UFC. You know, he's dropping his hands and doing a little showboat and having some fun. I mean, didn't pay off for him, but it was entertaining.
Oh gosh, when he dropped his hands towards the beginning, I forget what round, I was like, what are you doing? No. But what do I know? I'm not a fighter.
Wilson Hayes picked up the big win. Just an impressive finish there with the rear naked choke. His submission game is fun. Said, you know, he kind of understands he's probably not going to get the title shot right away. So, you know, he said that he would like to fight Ian McCall. I did run into, at the end of the night, Ian McCall was in the crowd tonight. Of course, if you didn't see the news earlier, he did get Ian McCall didn't end up getting his show money. He ended up getting his win money.
Yeah.
And he ended up getting his Reebok money as well. So his athlete outfitting money, I should say. So, you know, worked out for Ian McCall. He still wants to get booked again quickly. Wilson Hayes seemed like he was down with it. So I got to say, it seems like they're both down for the fight. And, you know, Demetrius is on hold until the Ultimate Fighter gets done and he gets a flyweight out of there. So, I mean, honestly, I think that fight makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does. And I know he was a little bit upset about the fact that, you know, he's going from having a shot at it to now getting the point of where now, you know, didn't get a chance. And now there's this whole tough competition. And now this virtual unknown or whoever is going to get a shot. And so he's getting pushed back down again, pushed back down again. And I know he wants the title shot. He still wants it. But, you know, he also wants to stay busy. I think most guys, I mean, who wants to sit back and possibly wait? I mean, because we've talked about it before. You know, you're trying to wait for the champ. You think you got the next shot, but there's somebody up ahead. And then what happens if the champ gets injured? You're gonna try to sit on the sidelines again, you know? But then it's a double-edged sword because you want to fight, you want to keep working. But then if you take a loss, you drop back down in there again, you know? But good for him. I mean, he put on a great fight. He's going to keep fighting. I mean, I think guys at that level, they realize that, you know, it's out of their control. They'd rather, you know, and if they're going to keep winning, they're going to keep performing well, they're going to get those W's. Mm-hmm. And then that title fight's going to take care of itself. But, you know, you got to feel for him a little bit there. And he was so close to getting that opportunity. And now it just kind of seems that, not politics, but whatever, this show, you know, they're kind of pushing him off to the side for the fact of creating some new thing for a show that most people have already, like, are already thinking it's kind of tired, and now you're affecting rankings and placements and other things that normally were already tough enough. I think a lot of guys already have a hard time getting that shot. So when you get close to shot and you have that shot, now they're like, oh, wait, by the way, we have a show that's not really getting the ratings that it used to, so we're going to try something new. And by the way, it's gonna push you guys back a little bit more while we do this thing again. So it's tough, and you feel for them because it's, you know, it is what it is. I mean, it's
I mean, it depending on what Demetrius Johnson's schedule is. Now, here's the thing is, I'm not exactly sure what the nature of Demetrius Johnson's injury is. I don't think that they've revealed exactly what it is. I will say that I've heard that his timetable for return is still just out indefinitely, that they don't really know when he's going to be back yet. And so if he's going to be back in the fall, I mean, you could do Wilson Hayes versus Demetrius Johnson and then say the winner of that fight gets the winner of Tough, because I think the Tough finale is the first week of December, like December 3rd. I mean, so the earliest they'd want to fight again for the title would probably be like the Super Bowl card or something like that. But you could do Hayes and Demetrius for the title if and, you know?
He made it seem like he had heard nothing from the brass at this point, giving him any inclination like that was even a thing. Like, in his mind, it was thinking that it was going to be a Tough winner or whatever. So whatever they're thinking is, or whatever, they're not, at least not doing a good job of saying, hey, buddy, you're still right there. You're still right there. They've kind of, if anything else, have kind of just dropped communications on that side. So you kind of felt bad for him. But who knows? I mean, it does make sense that they could give him something. But, you know, I feel like this has happened before where guys have been right in line and then something's kind of shuffled again. And through no fault of their own, somehow they're getting shuffled further and further back in the deck because that moment passed where they were like, and maybe some people would say that maybe, you know, they were reaching for just somebody different in the first place and giving him a shot. So maybe
it's true. He wasn't, you can make that argument.
He maybe wasn't the number one person at that point, but he was the only one available at that time. And but you feel for him because through no fault of his own, you know, that opportunity seems to get now further and further away from him.
That is true. The early prelims, the most forgettable fight of the night, to be honest with you, Michael Graves, Bojan Velikovic, fought to a draw. Honestly, probably not a bad decision there with it being a draw. Michael Graves, we spoke to earlier in the week, you know, was frustrated with himself last time over a victory. I'm sure he'll be even more frustrated with himself after this. It was just not a great fight. And the first fight of the night, Damian Brown, our buddy from Brisbane, who had some incredible off-the-record stories about his time in the prison system. Hopefully we can get him to tell that on record one of these days, although he kept telling you over and over.
That's not running,
that's
is
not,
it?
Camera's not
the
running,
camera's
right?
not on, right?
Like, no, it's not. But he scored a big knockout victory there, and man, was just super emotional and super excited, man. He really, really, really was fired up about this win.
Yeah, it was great. I was very, very happy for him and very, very happy for our roadshow friends back in Brisbane and in Australia who are big, big fans of him. You guys got a boy that you could be proud of. I mean, he does the right things, and I was really kind of caught up in the whole emotional point that he was feeling, you know, because he didn't really say anything when we were having our interviews, but his, you know, sort of talking to veterans and other people that have served in the military, you know, to try to tell them that there are options out there, there are things. It was something, and he sort of explained a little bit in the back, but he didn't really go into it too much. But I thought it was incredible. Like, this dude, I mean, one, served for his country, and then he now works in the prison system, and now he's doing this, and he's not even still at this point able to do it full time. Like, this guy has grinded through some stuff, man, and he just, you know, I have the utmost respect for him now, even more so after I figured out and found out that he was a veteran and, you know, is out there trying to take care and send a message to other veterans, you know, to that there is support out there and there are options, you can do things, you know, just kind of really just made me think he's one heck of a dude and he's one heck of a fighter. I mean, what a performance tonight. So
it was amazing. And again, just seeing his emotions after coming in on short notice, fighting in Brisbane and losing his debut and then picking up a win here tonight, I know it meant the world to him. So very cool. Well, Cole Coffee, it's after 6 a.m. here.
It's 6 a.m.
It is 6 a.m. The sun is going to be peaking up here in Atlanta. sometime shortly. We still got to edit this podcast, get it online, and then try to get a couple hours sleep before we head to the airport. We'll be home for a couple of days, and then it's off to Salt Lake City. We got quite the run. The couple of events are official now. The Brazilian event that we've been talking about forever is finally announced. We got some stuff coming up in the fall.
Yeah. I'm at a loss right now. Why do we do these and a half shows?
Don't you complain about being tired.
Eastern time.
Jason from Arizona is going to be very upset with you complaining about.
Probably.
All right. Well, listen, UFC 201 did end up featuring Tyron Woodley, the new UFC welterweight champion. It ended up being a fun night of fights, and we're just now exhausted, and we're going to leave. So I'm just going to say it very quickly. Thanks for listening.